because that would kind of be the tendency. Sorry.
It's because my eyes clouded over and I couldn't see. I kept blinking trying to clear it.
Oh my, okay. Uh-oh, do I not have this symbol? Ooh, I don't think I have this symbol on this phone. Oh, it's just something. There's only a certain number of symbols that I have available to me on the phone, and my password, my new password, isn't one of them. So that means that I can't... I can't input the new thing on here. It's just going to continually tell me I can't sign in, as I guess. I'm going to have to fight the eternal battle of everybody saying, hey, if it's a technical problem, I don't have to get involved. All I have to do is say, hey, something's not working and it gets fixed. And you're going, no. This is the problem we're facing now is most likely a problem of something isn't coded right. And part of your job is to make sure this stuff works, you know? Since there's too many people trying to just shove off everything that, you know, I'm frankly trying to slough work. And you're going, you know, since it's not my job to be the expert at your job. Since I know Gary is such a resource that he often is better at your job than you are. And you go, but we need to get past that. Said, Gary is not going to live forever. Although he's only 57. He's had a couple of scares, though, but he's really anal about his health. So chances are he'll keep going for a long time. But
he's got to retire eventually.
No, he doesn't. Look at Dwayne, Ryan. He didn't have to retire. Dwayne's been there for 50 years. He should have retired 25 years ago. But did he? No. And every time somebody tries to throw him a retirement party, he gets really upset. Says, you know, old, what's his name? Who's now gone. The college president.
Noel?
Yeah. He threw him a party, a retirement party, and I don't think Dwayne went. Because he said, I'm being forced out. I didn't say I was retiring. There's several people who say they want him to retire. And that was what it basically was. It was basically a lot of people just saying, yeah, it's about time. We need to move on. We need fresh blood in there. We need this and that. And it's like, ooh, I don't think that went over very well for Dwayne. I don't blame him. You know? But it also comes the whole thing that people think that they pretty much own their jobs. But can I be honest? In the situation that it's all in, people probably have that assumption because that's a pretty reasonable thing to assume. It sure feels that way. A person getting fired is almost unheard of. Because you have to do something really, over the top, terrible for that to happen to you. How are my tires doing, Matt? I need to replace my back tires, too. They're getting really thin. Ah. So yeah. Funny thing about life. But yeah. You know? I used to run up against it a lot. You know? And somebody would say, well, something's broken. It's not working right. You go, well, there's a reasonable chance because you're not doing something right. And they go, well, you need to tell me what I'm doing wrong. And you go,
I don't know your job.
Yeah. And I suppose that I was really the first person to start asserting this. Apparently, Joseph never did that. He would learn enough about your job to figure it out. And it's like, I'm not going to do that. You can contact it. In Lucian, you can contact your own consultant so that you can feel like that you're not just some cog in the thing, that you actually know what you're doing. That was what made my job so boring after a while at New Mexico State, was I encouraged them so much to do their own research and to solve their own problems that they got so good at it that I was sitting around the office bored because they just didn't need me very much. And they're going, I can take care of the back, you know, the weird back stuff that really needs, that you really don't need to know about, you know. But the basic stuff, you know, come on. You can do that without consulting me. Am I going to break something? And you go, you know what? If you break it, I'll fix it.
Then why can't you fix this?
Oh, this is different. This
yeah,
is the actual back-end
say application.
And you go, well, you're actually, you know, when you see somebody running through this little script on a piece of paper, this is how I handle this. And they'll show it to you and say, this is this, it needs to work like this. And you go, you know, things do change. And you need to engage your own resources to see if there's something you can do about it. Just because I got practically snitty yesterday. Says, I took down the whole university system for your problem. I was pretty sure that wasn't going to solve it. But you weren't going to do anything about it until I did something like that. Says, and I'm sorry. I'm getting pretty upset about always being thrown into that position. 20 minutes after I hear a problem, I have to reboot everything. You go, not a systemic problem. If none of this is working, that's a systemic problem. Reboots handle that. If a few people it isn't working for, that's not a systemic problem. Because now, I'm not saying that it isn't something that we need to adjust on our end, but we need to engage with solutions. I said it's much easier. If you engage with Aleutian, then we engage with Aleutian, because they're going to ask me a lot of questions
I don't have the answers to.
And I'm going to have to constantly bother you. I says, I know you're going to tell me how busy you are and how you really can't deal with this. And you go, I'm sorry, this is your job. Your job is not just to run through scripts. Everything's hunky-dory. We actually pay you to be competent in some things. Not just running a drone, okay? If that was true, I could automate your job, and we could get rid of you. And save some money. Which is kind of what Clark's doing right now. He wants us to look at ways to automate things. He says save money. And you're going, no, it's for position elimination. I understand that. anyway, so. Yeah. And it always is. It's this constant fight. Well, actually, it's really backed off, and I think it's because I've been such a jerk about it. We contacted Elution. What does Elution said? Trust me, said, if it's something on the back end, Elution will let me know. They'll dump it in my lap, and that's fine. But I am not your go-between. And boy, let me tell you, there was a couple of guys that was their biggest thing. You're our go-between between us and Elution. We don't understand what they're talking about. They're going, they're talking about your job, what you're supposed to be doing. And it is, man. How many directors have I had to tangle with over stuff like this? It's almost got to the point where it's like, don't bug Nemro about this stuff. I occasionally go to the big meeting where all the bigwigs go to talk about technology. And my primary business there is to scare the crap out of them. Or I figured that that's always worked really well. You know, I'll tell them about the upcoming updates that we're going to have to do it in such and such a way so to reduce downtime. And we're not going to have access to database. They go, oh, yes. You're not going to have access to the database.
Oh, tarantula. Oh, what's this one? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he's got to take a picture.
Yes. Oh, a pretty one.
Gotcha.
He'll even slow down for you. Because I think all tarantulas like to have their pictures. That's the thing, I think. I'm not going to say it's narcissistic. These like to have fun. But yeah, I don't know. I've noticed over time, I don't know if it's good or not, but I do have a lot of influence over how things go. And I think these people had gotten accustomed to, and I think Clark had kind of encouraged the whole ITS owns all technology problems, and it's like, no, they do not. I do not. It can be a banner problem. Be prepared for me to say, why don't you put in a ticket to Elution? If you want me to, I'll initiate it for you, which is what I'll do if they start giving me garbage. You know, I don't understand that technical stuff. And it's like, he says, don't worry, I'll contact you. And they do. Knowing that there's always this battle. And they'll call the end user. And they'll say, what do you see? What do you do? And they'll go through their screens. And a reasonable amount of time, not off a tap, a reasonable amount of time, we never even get involved. Because they'll say, oh, they had this set this way. We recommended to them to set it this other way. And now it's working. And it's like, oh, great. Go to the biggest thing. That's what you do with me after a while. Thank you.
That's really smoky.
Still hazy, yeah. Looks like somebody's still burning garbage. Well, that's what they're told to do. To solve things like weeds and such. Sometimes they burn them. Anyway. You can tell me along well. Why is ITS handling the help desk? And they go, well, all things people call about are technical. And they go, maybe. But you look at it from the management standpoint, and you go, so what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to try to round this stuff? Nobody else wants to hear from people with problems. They don't like it. We don't either, but I think Clark is a servant leader, which I used to think that was a good thing. Now I'm not so sure anymore. I know there's a certain generation of managers who walk in their office, say their prayer before their cross, before the day begins, and do that. I said, I'm not sitting here poo-pooing that particular way of doing it. I said, but nobody seems to recognize that it's got some problems, too. You can't just always say, well, we'll just take care of that. We will handle that. If something needs to be done, we'll just take care of it. You go, it's bad because everybody then starts just bringing all their problems to the meeting, dumping it on the floor in front of you, and waiting for you to say, well, I guess we'll handle it. And you're going, you got to get to the point where you say, no, I'm not going to handle that. If you want me to be part of the solution, that's great. If you just want me to do the whole solution, and you sit there and kind of get to gripe and complain about it, which is pretty typical, you know. I don't like the way this thing goes. I don't like the solution you came up with. And you go, well, as you'll recall, you came in and expressed your little issue, jumped it on the floor, and then expected everybody else to fix it for you. Says, which means that whatever solution it comes up with, I think it's beholden upon you to shut your mouth and be grateful that somebody did something about it. If it's not to your liking, here, I'll give it to you. You handle it. Oh no, I don't know. That's too technical for me. I don't know what's... And you go, then shut up. Be grateful somebody's handling it. Thank you. This is just normal. I mean, this is just normal being a decent person stuff, you know? If somebody's handling something for you, you don't give them crap about how it's being done. That's why when people say, I'm so upset at the federal government with how they're handling this, 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 and this. And you go, you beg them to do something about it. Says, which means that whatever solution they come up with, you should shut your mouth and be grateful for. That's called being a good slave.
Yeah, Roy said he got a surplus check. Fanny said that she didn't, but when she was giving me all their income, they never mentioned the surplus check.
Well, you really didn't need to get involved in the money part.
I was told that I was supposed to find out what their what their expenses are.
In this particular case?
He can determine whether they really need help buying groceries.
I don't think that's appropriate.
That I know.
And he may very well come back and say, okay, no. This is, I will talk to Sister Nemro when it's food. And if there's any provisos I need to give, I will give them to Sister Nemro. Don't contact her directly saying, I need food. Oh, you can, but she'll just refer you straight to me. So you might as well just save the time and effort and just contact me.
Except that's not the word that
I know.
Comes out from Salt Lake.
I know. Because I think, and I don't mean to be rude about the guys in Salt Lake, but they have this beautiful picture in their mind.
And I told him, I said, I hate this.
Yeah.
I said, I feel like I'm being nosy, and it's none of my business.
Right.
I said, no, this is what I'm told to do, and I feel really uncomfortable doing it.
Yeah. You might talk to President and say, I'm perfectly fine handling food issues. I said, but no, I don't think it's my role to go digging in their finances. That's not my job.
Well, according to...
Because you can't distribute...
Salt Lake, it is my job.
Well, no, I think that's an interpretation. I don't think you have to go by that. Because then you're put into the problem of having to ascertain that.
No,
and of course,
I collect the information and give it to the president.
Yes, I know, but it doesn't matter. To the person that's getting the aid, you're the person. They have to lie to you, or they have to tell the truth to you, or they have to hide things from you, or try to show off more of this thing and that thing to them, and that's not your job.
And I told you, if it wasn't for this COVID thing, I'd be going through your refrigerator and your cupboards.
It's not a discernment thing.
Yeah.
I said, I'm sorry. Nobody says that the Lucite present gets the gift of discernment. They always say that bishops get that. And you're going, so yeah. Says money is intangible. You can't sit there and lay your hands on it and touch it and count it and say, okay, now I know exactly what the situation is. You don't.
Yeah.
Having you kind of act as his agent, it's doable, it can be done, but because I'm sorry, being the guy in charge of money is, I'm just going to give it a term, it's the asshole job. And that's why I say, he says, everybody says how wonderful their bishop is and how marvelous and how fantastic they are. And you go, wow, I don't think that's really what the bishop should be doing. And this whole thing about how our bishops and branch presidents doing with their shepherding. And you go, I think we're mixing our metaphors hard.
Yeah.
The bishop is the guy that makes the craft run. Said he's the said I think we've mixed too many roles together. They keep saying, well, we need to lighten the load on the bishops, and you go, well, the first thing you need to do is you need to make sure you get the definition of what a bishop should be handled first. The bishop should not be your spiritual leader. I don't care how wonderful he is. He's supposed to be a hard ass. He's supposed to tell you the things that you don't want to hear. He's not supposed to be the nice guy. You can call somebody else to be the nice guy. You can have the branch of rewards get together and vote on who the sweetest person is and let that person be your spiritual leader. Even the Indians do it better. The actual leader of the tribe is a different person than their medicine man. You do not have them combined in one person. It's just two different things. The big leader can't be burdened by a whole lot of, oh, what will people think of me type crap. No. Jews had it very separate. If you had a prophet, that was one thing. That was fine. The priest was the guy muscling the meat around at the temple. Throwing on this sacrifice, throwing on that sacrifice, making sure it was done right. You go, and that's basically the job of a bishop. I mean, he's not flinging around slabs of this and slabs of that. But he makes sure things get done right. By the sacrament, such an anal thing. And everybody looks over at him to make sure it's okay. He has to sign off on it. Through what should be the Aaronic priesthood is not really a preparation for the Melchizedek priesthood. It's not. I don't mean to be rude. They're two completely separate things. Its preparatoriness was, in all of its ritualisticness, was to constantly beat upon you the importance of a savior, the importance of constantly remembering him. In fact, almost everything in Judaism is about remembering God. Almost every ritual that goes on, now they've all been made weird. They're strange now, but that's okay. At the heart, the original ones, were all about remembering what God's done for you. The Passover, remembering what God did for you. Which you'll know how God is, and that you'll turn to him. Well, Melchizedek is a whole other animal. And one does not in being just the boy's auxiliary. It's like, yes. Ourselves and tell people how important the sacrament is, but we render it somewhat impotent because it is not the central function of somebody who is respectable. Priests or guys that go out and party Saturday night, do all kinds of crazy stuff, and they come in on Sunday, and everybody kind of goes, I knew what you did last night.
And you're sitting in here with what's happening.
Yeah. That's why I said, we've misconstrued a lot of things around that, including the bishop. Said the bishop is the presiding high priest. The only reason why that was done was because they said, well, there needs to be one person that's ultimately in charge of everything. And you go, no. Because, let me tell you, for Andy, trying to be the spiritual shepherd of the branch and being the guy that kind of says no to a lot of people when they're asking for something that doesn't go together. And you go, yeah. So that's why most bishops go yay when they're not the agent bishop, because they don't have to handle all the welfare issues. Really glad that they're not along an interstate highway, you know, because of all the help they have to give there. And when they have to say no, all the time. Just sometimes it's got to be tough. And then they go, I feel bad because most of the time after people, I've said no to people, they don't want to come to church anymore. And you go,
hey.
Yeah.
Even after giving Fanny help in the past, she didn't darken the door to church.
And that's exactly what he's doing. And honestly, I'm not sure the two should be very connected. But the problem is, when you shove all that in response, shove all that stuff onto one person's plate, and you expect them to be a spiritual paragon, and to be
the judge.
Yeah. They said, it was really easy. We kept those separate. You didn't have them. Very rarely do we see. The judge and the leader being the same person. It creates problems. One of the Nephites' biggest problems. They come the two roles together. The best thing was when Alma said, I really need to concentrate on the church and spirituality. I'm giving up the judgment seat. And you go, yeah, it shouldn't be held by two people. You should get a judge that's connected to the Lord, of course. You want a man who recognizes spirit. Heck, you want that for your military leader, right? That was Captain Moroni, spiritual man. I said, but was he the leader of the government? No. Was he the prophet? No. He wasn't the leader of the church.
No.
We're all supposed to be somewhat like prophets.
Right.
Anyway, so yeah, it goes like that. And if they ever asked me for one word of advice, that would be the word. It says, need to. You guys need to do something about the enrollment, Chris. I said, it's not doing its job. The people that you call bishops are too busy being the presiding high priest to actually do the bishop's job correctly. Doesn't matter how much you tell them that it's not their job. Doesn't matter how much you try to tell them that they see the problem is now. It's like, well, then you're spending time primarily with the youth. And you're going, oh, guys, you're still getting it wrong. The Aaronic priest is not supposed to be a bunch of kids. It's not very honorable to call Aaron just a big, fat, old kid. That certainly doesn't make him a respected person. Because look at how much they went through.
They finally made it a topic seat, yeah.
When they ordained Aaron, it was a huge affair. Everybody had to bow before him. All this stuff. And you're going, oh my gosh. And you're going, what's become of the Aaronic priesthood now? Said it's a shell, it's a husk. So now, if the Lord has simply handed over, which I think he has, and just said you can do as it will, then, you know, said, all I can do is say, I think you've got something here that could be very powerful that you guys are just kind of flushing down the toilet.
And now they've got 11-year-olds
here. Well,
and it's like, but why don't you just do it when they're 8, when they turn 8 and get baptized?
Yeah, it was kind of cute. They're all going to go together as a group. Like, the quorum is the most important thing. And they're going, yeah, I know. It's because most people looked at it and said, these quorums are worthless. So they were trying to pump up the quorum. And you're going, but you don't give the quorum. The quorum has nothing to do. Everything the Lord said was the responsibility of deacons. They don't do. They're not asked to do. And you go, it's because you give it to children. And when you make a 13-year-old in charge of these responsibilities, but then not, what do you expect?
sex.
Even a grown man, when he's baptized, they give him priest instead of having to go through deacon and teacher.
Well, I don't feel like it's a progression.
My dad was a teacher when he was 35 years old and couldn't baptize me.
Right.
Today, they would have said, oh no, we have to at least... We'll ordain you to be a priest and baptize your daughter.
I'm not to say that that's the problem.
That's what they do today.
Yes, but I'm not going to say that that's the problem. Like, let me give you a Portales example. I said, if Jerry Green is taking care of facilities and he's making sure the grounds are okay, dealing with contractors who have been tasked with doing the mowing and stuff like that, and you go, you know what? That's a deacon's responsibility, and Jerry should be the deacon's quorum president, and you better the heck give him the respect he deserves as being the guy that's mostly in charge of making sure this stuff looks good and that it's not distracting, which is really important to spirituality. You got a bunch of weeds around your church, and it looks dilapidated and falling apart, or it's too hot, or it's too cold. There's people which the Lord, in the Doctrine and Covenants, this isn't like something from 6,000 years ago stuff. This was stuff to Joseph Smith. That was the deacon's thing. Going, is it a big deal? And you go, yeah. And you go, would you hand this into the hand of a 13-year-old just casually like we do it now? No. And you go, then there you go. Your teacher's quorum president is in charge of teaching. We translate that into home teaching, which isn't bad. Of course, now that's kind of gone down the hole. Ministering is much more of a gelatinous thing.
Yeah.
And you go, can I be honest? I said, whoever you have as your Sunday school president, that should probably be your teacher's quorum president. And everybody who has an assignment specific to teaching should be part of the teacher's quorum. Ordained to it, for Pete's sakes, if nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. I think the Aaronic priest and the Melchizedek priest should be treated differently. There might not be a problem with having sisters ordained to Aaronic priesthood call. They're big things. You might not want to make them priests. I don't know. That's something you go into. You know. All the Aaronic priesthood ordinances. And for me, the Melchizedek priesthood is about family and elite family leadership and a temple. That's why I almost said that I think it should go like it goes in the temple. When you take a man to the temple for the first time and he gets his washings and anointings done, the first thing that happens, girls you might not know this, is that if they haven't gotten the Melchizedek priest yet, they get it there. They get ordained right there. And you go, I think that should be the way you do it with the living, too. Because I don't have a problem with 90-year-old priests. Now they may be an elder in their family, to lead their family, be able to do anything else, be entitled to the same exaltation as anybody else, because the covenants they've made in the temple that go along with the Melchizedek priesthood. Says, but yeah. Does he have another calling? Sure. Is he a priest? Sure. But that guy would have so much more an interest in doing it in the way that God has always wanted these kinds of performances done. Exactly. With gravity and all that. And people go, well, that's not how it's been done forever. And you go, no, that's not even true. 60 years ago, yeah, your dad had the Aaronic priesthood and did not have the Melchizedek priesthood. And he had a calling. Now, nobody knew what to do with them. But, so people come back and go, well, that's not, we haven't done that, done it that way since the old days of